Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our Crop Life Foundation seed treatment benefits launch event. Thank you for joining us here in person and on the telephone. I understand there are about 10 or 12 folks already on the telephone with us as well, so welcome. It's a real pleasure for Crop Life Foundation to gather together with you here at the National Press Club today as we unveil this important document on seed treatment and its benefits to modern agriculture. Hopefully you all have already picked up a copy of the full report, and we'll page through it as we talk here this morning. I'd like to take a moment to introduce the participants in this morning's panel discussion, which will begin in just a few minutes after I take you through some of the highlights of the new study we're releasing today. Joining me on the panel will be Andy Levine, President and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association, and Tim Burrick, a farmer from Iowa and Vice Chair of the Board of Directors of Truth About Trade and Technology, based in Des Moines, Iowa. Thank you, Andy and Tim, for being with us today. And I'd also like to recognize a couple of other individuals in the audience. Sarah McClellan, who is the Executive Director of Crop Life Foundation, Dr. Barb Glenn and Dr. Ray McAllister of the Crop Life America staff, who were instrumental in helping consolidate input from a wide variety of experts on seed treatment benefits from around the United States and literally around the world, and bring this report together. Crop Life Foundation is a not-for-profit organization founded to promote and advance sustainable agriculture and the environmentally sound use of crop protection products. Through a number of key reports, benefit studies, educational outreach, and other stewardship initiatives, the foundation aims to spread awareness of the benefits of crop protection products and promote the sound stewardship of our industry's technologies. The report being discussed today fits very well into the foundation's mission as it communicates the benefits of what has evolved to become one of the most important and popular as well as effective methods of crop protection today. Crop Life Foundation is obviously attached to Crop Life America, the trade association that many of us also work for that represents the U.S. Basic manufacturers, formulators, and distributors of crop protection products. Our members supply over 95% of all of those products to American farmers today. Crop Life America is celebrating our 80th anniversary in 2013, and we're winding down on this celebration because 2013 is almost over. But if you'd like a copy of our annual report where we celebrate the great progression of American agriculture and all of the innovation that has occurred over the last 8 decades that we have been together as an organization, please let our staff know, and we'll get a copy of our annual report to you. Crop Life Foundation has been around for about a dozen years, but I would also defer to Andy Levine. Andy, ASTA is 130 years old this year, so you're always going to be ahead of us, but congratulations on that. So without further delay, let's dive right into the report and look at some of the highlights. So you've all got a copy of the report as you've entered the event here today in the venue. It's full of information specific to all of the major commodities grown in the United States. For those of you who are joining us via teleconference, the report is available if you want to go online at www.croplifeamerica.org/seedtreatment. Seed treatment involves the application of crop protection products such as insecticides and fungicides directly to the surface of a seed. This approach to crop protection was introduced in its earliest forms by farmers literally thousands of years ago. In recent decades, the industry has formulated more efficient and environmentally sound seed treatment products and seed enhancements. Without the use of seed treatments, farmers would not have the means to successfully protect the vulnerable seedlings for crops such as corn, soybeans, rice, wheat, barley, potatoes, and many, many more. So here are just a few reasons why farmers in the U.S. and around the world choose seed treatment. Seed treatments provide effective control against many early season pests and diseases and save growers time and money by reducing the need for additional rescue treatments and replanting later on in the season, while also allowing them to get a jump start on the growing season. And I know, Tim, from a practical standpoint, you'll be able to speak to that directly as a benefit to you as a grower. Seed treatments also contribute value to a large proportion of the seed industry in this country that has already seen considerable innovation in the seed itself. And in effect, and once again, Tim, you can speak to this, seed is much more expensive than it was 20 or 30 years ago. And so there's an incentive to make an additional investment in seed protection coating, if you will, to protect an ever more valuable seed technology. Seed treatments continue to contribute to higher plant populations and healthier, more uniform crop stands. Ultimately, this means greater and quantity and quality of food production for consumers. Because seed treatments are already applied to the seed, they reduce the potential off-target exposure of crop protection products to man and the environment. Crop protection products applied as seed treatments reduce other application methods to large areas of farmland, and we'll show an example of that in a little while. And in some cases, like for like can reduce the amount of crop protection material used in the field by 99%. Enhancements to products such as polymers and other coatings that aren't technically crop protection active ingredients have also been part of the innovation stream in seed treatment progression, and we'll talk a little bit about some of those innovations as we go along this morning. The economic growth of seed treatments within the last decade alone is a telling indication of just how valuable this segment of our crop protection industry is. Sales of seed treatments totaled just $950 million in 2001. That number rose to nearly $3 billion by 2011. Corn is one of the many crops that benefits from seed treatment applications, and in 2011, seed treatments helped to contribute to the American farmers nearly $80 billion worth of the corn crop value produced in that growing season. These are just a few of the key points outlined in the report that demonstrate the importance of this tool for modern agriculture. For all of these reasons and many, many more, seed treatment is a vital component in the suite of technologies that farmers select in order to produce food and fiber for our American consumer and consumers around the world. And it's important to emphasize that agricultural exports are an ever-growing key part of the health of the U.S. farm economy. Secretary Vilsack just 2 weeks ago announced a new record value for U.S. agricultural exports in the fiscal year ended September 30, exceeding $140 billion. So let's turn to a few slides for a little bit more detail around what we can tell you about some of the highlights that are in the report. So first of all, what is seed treatment? It's a direct application of crop protection products, fungicides or insecticides, or a combination to the surface of the seed prior to planting. Uses are to suppress, control, or repel pathogens, insects, and other pests. Systemic pesticides, and especially fungicides, were first registered in the United States for seed treatment in the 1970s. Neonicotinoid insecticides were first registered by US EPA in 1994. At least 60 different species of plant parasitic nematodes feed on corn plant in the North America. Seed treatment products provide protection against those. Fungus called blackleg can reduce canola yields by 50%. We know in the production of onions that they are susceptible to attack from onion maggots, which can have the potential loss of 70 to 100% of the crop that could be produced. So what about the grower benefits that lead to healthier crops and other outcomes? So grower benefits include providing effective control against many early season pests and diseases. Common pests controlled by seed treatment include nematodes, thrips, wireworms, cinch bugs, aphids, Colorado potato beetle, grape calypsis, and many others. Common diseases or pathogens controlled by seed treatment include Phythium, Rhizotonia, Fusarium, Phytophthora, late blight, downy mildew, and many others. Seed treatment polymers reduce seed planting gaps by approximately 90% in some small seeded crops like vegetable seeds. And Andy may be able to speak to some of those innovations and the benefits that not only flow to farmers, but greatly benefit the seed industry itself. With regard to healthier crops, fungicide seed treatments are active against diseases like Thelovisopsis that can produce a 65% increase in cotton stand compared to untreated seed plots. Seed treatment insecticides applied to rice seed in Arkansas reduced damage from grape calypsis larvae by up to 83%. Stands of spring wheat and barley increased by 25% when seed was treated with insecticide. In one Texas study, treated cotton seeds yielded 73 to 123 more pounds of cotton lint per acre versus the control. I mentioned a few moments ago the differential in the amount of active ingredient that may be needed for controlling a disease or an insect in an acre of crop. And this illustration in this slide just gives you a little bit of a visual of the magnitude of the differential of the amount of active ingredient. Once again, to help reduce the potential exposure off-target to animals, humans, and other parts of the environment. We like to talk these days a lot about the importance and the advancements around precision agriculture. Mostly we think about very precise operation of machinery that's driven by GPS controls from satellites and allowing us to apply sprays sprays and other treatments and direct sprayers so that we get much more precise application of pesticides or application of nutrient fertilizers. We reduce the amount of overlap in operations because of the precision direction from GPS controls. But actually, the technologies of seed treatment also provide a significant amount of precision increase. It can obviously reduce soil exposure by up to 99% compared to surface applications of some crop protection products. Applied rates of only 10 to 40 grams of active ingredient per acre might compare to up to a pound for a granular insecticide treatment. Technology is improved from application to ounces per 100 weight of seed to milligrams per individual seed. The economic benefits, which ultimately drive the response from farmers, are very real. Through increased protection and greater crop yields, the contribution to that $80 billion value of the U.S. Corn crop produced by American farmers in 2011 is very real. Sales of seed treatments, as I mentioned earlier, have nearly tripled over the last decade. Seed varieties developed through modern breeding techniques combined with effective seed treatments provide nearly 100% crop stand. Every seed can produce a mature plant. We made a mention of the neonicotinoid insecticides a few minutes ago. These products include imidacloprid, thimethoxam, and clothianidin. They provide broad-spectrum control of a range of insects and reduce damage from, for instance, stink bugs and sugarcane beetles by 50 to more than 90%. Neonic seed treatments more than doubled the stands of sorghum in Louisiana research trials. UC Berkeley research on neonics indicates improved plant health and enhanced stress tolerance, especially under drought conditions. And I'd pause here and just remind us that a year ago we were all kind of shaking off the aftermath of a historic drought in 2012, and yet once all the counting got done, USDA reported that we had incredibly high yields thanks to a variety of innovations and technologies wisely used by the American farmer to help with drought tolerance. So there are many factors that influence the adoption of seed treatment, and they include changes in farm and production demands. improved commodity prices over the last 5 or 6 years have certainly driven demand for seed treatment and enhanced productivity. Improved planting equipment, as an example, there are a lot of 36-row planters out there that can plant 1,000 acres a day or more. And, Tim, you probably have experienced some of those long days, but very productive days in planting corn crop. Increased adoption of conservation tillage has, of course, been another important innovation in American agriculture and elsewhere around the world. But we also know that conservation tillage changes the environment for a planted seed. Another reason why protecting seed with seed treatment in combination with conservation tillage advancements drives innovation and productivity. Improved protection of biotechnology-enhanced seedlings is also important, and I talked about the higher value and expense of seed, another reason to protect the seed. And then lastly, increasingly efficient seed treatment equipment is out there as part of the overall innovation scenario that we're talking about here today. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for allowing me to give you this quick overview of a very comprehensive report of a very important technology of our industry. I'd now like to introduce Andy Levine from the American Seed Trade Association to provide a seed industry perspective. Andy?
Thanks, Jay. Good morning, everyone. Appreciate the opportunity to partner with CropLife America and CropLife Foundation on this report that's coming out with respect to seed treatment and the benefits to the agriculture industry. A little bit on the American Seed Trade Association. As Jay said, this year we celebrated our 130th anniversary as an association. We represent all producers of seed, anything that's planted by seed from alfalfa to zucchini. And so this issue is very near and dear to our hearts as we look at the evolution of the technology. Seed breeding has changed quite dramatically over the last 20 years in the ability to identify favorable or unfavorable traits, identify color in flowers or vegetables, identify stand and sturdiness in corn and soybean plants and cotton plants. And that ability to identify those specific traits enables a seed company to enhance them or to, what we'd say, turn down the specific traits to benefit the farmer with the seed that's produced at the end. And so the seed companies have made dramatic investments in order to improve those varieties, and technology or technological advances over the last 15 years have really expedited that ability or capability of the companies. Seed treatment comes along, or seed treatments and seed coatings come along, and really protect that seed as it's put into the ground for the farmer. And that's a huge benefit as we look at what the products are going forward. And you think about it, as Jay said, it's a precise application put on the product as it's put into the ground. And so there's, what we look at it is really three huge benefits that are identified in this report for the seed industry, ultimately for America's farmers as they go forward. You have that targeted, precise application on the seed. You're reducing that need for possibly a pre-plant in-furrow application or a broadcast application pre-plant to the field. Secondly, you look at the ability to protect the seed in the area immediately around it. As that seed begins to develop its root system and its root ball, as it begins to develop that early growth, you've got that protection from any soil-borne pests or diseases that may be there. And then, as I mentioned, it reduces that need for that in-furrow or that broadcast application prior to planting of the seed, ensuring that strong stand. And any of you that have been across the Midwest or out west or south in Florida and looking at vegetable plants, you have that ability to have consistent size of seed, helps in that planting process. You have that plant in exactly the same place the right place that you need it, in very uniform stand to maximize the yield potential of that crop. Along with that, as you come through the usage of it and the continued adoption of the seed treatment, we need to make sure as an industry that we enhance our stewardship practices. Again, working very closely with CropLife America, the grower organizations, Ag Retailers Association, working very hard to ensure that the stewardship and understanding of the use of seed treatment is there. We don't want to have any adverse impact on the environment, pollinators, or any other species as we go forward. So what we look at it is that it's just vital that we continue to store the product. And lastly, what we look at is the technology continues to change dramatically. It's much like the breeding techniques. We have new coating methods that will encapsulate the seed better to ensure that you don't have any unnecessary dust off. You look at the ability to also include micronutrients. So as that plant is growing its root system, it's also being able to be fed from the coating around the seed. Certain microbial products that are now being put on the seeds that are more beneficial in that soil to enhance that growth. So there are a lot of things that we'll continue to see going forward that enable America's farmers to ensure that they'll get a good stand and look at that almost 100% growth of every seed that they plant across the field. So we're excited about it. I do want to stress that this is used in every seed type across the country. If you think of the size of some of the seeds that are out there, whether they're lettuce seeds or grass seeds, they're very minute. But if that farmer wants to have an exact planting, we need to bulk them up. We need to put a seed treatment on them. We may need to put a micronutrient on it. And then you get it in the exact spot every place in that furrow as they go forward. So we're excited about this report. It helps put that perspective in the importance of seed treatment and that precise application as we go forward. And we look forward to any questions that you all may have today. Thank you.
So it was just a week ago yesterday that we Americans celebrated Thanksgiving on the continent. And I hope you all remember to keep farmers in your list of things to be thankful for, because if it wasn't for the very small number of hardworking farmers here in the United States, we'd all be very, very hungry. In fact, we'd starve to death. So it's my true pleasure to welcome Tim Burrick, a working farmer from northeast Iowa, farms several thousand acres, produces thousands and thousands of head of pork every year, and is one of those individuals who understands the responsible use of technology and stewardship. Tim, welcome.
Thank you, Jay. And Andy did a nice job, too, of explaining. This is an opportunity for me. I thank you for the invitation to come in and talk about basically my life. I've planted 40 years. This coming year, I'll be my 41st year of planting. Yesterday, I was at the Farm Journal Forum, and Chief Bruce Knight, formerly of the NRCS, said, farmers get 40 chances. It's been bothering me ever since. So I don't know what that means. He was right about you get one chance a year, and so as a result, I'm going to talk a little bit about the economics of why seed treatments are so important. But, you know, the technology change that these two have talked about is remarkable. And we're talking about seed treatments. I started, there really wasn't any. And then we went to applying it ourselves, and I took a wooden stick and dumped it in the planter box and then stirred it. And that's how we applied seed treatment. And do you think it was smooth, or do you think it was even? And now I wonder, did it work? But today I know it works. So let's talk about that. These seed treatments, the technology has been fantastic. You know, they're used to protect the seed from disease. You know, it's too cold, too wet, too many bugs. In 1989, I planted soybeans three times between the first of May and the 1st of July, just because it was wet and the disease took them out. And today I don't operate like that. The seed treatments have been fantastic. So let's talk about corn first. There's 80,000 units of seeds in a unit of corn. That unit of corn cost me about $300. On a per acre basis, I'm going to spend $125 to plant corn. Now, I've got a major investment. For the coming year, I'll invest about $200,000 in seed. But the seed treatment that's on that corn, you know, seed corn maggots, wireworms are just waiting there. They're in the ground. They say, can you hurry up and plant? We're getting hungry. And so when this seed corn comes in, it's already treated. It's in the, you know, it's I handle it in bulk, put it in a planter, and away we go. And it's been of great benefit. And the research indicates that I'm getting about 6 bushel an acre yield increase just due to seed treatments. Times 5, well, that's $30 an acre. And then you've got the diseases, Fusarium, Pythium, that are just laying there too, just waiting for it to be a little wet and a little cold. And believe me, warm and dry in the spring is the greatest thing a farmer could ever want. But wet and cold, which is what I just experienced in 2013, which was the toughest year for me in 40 years, and I'll talk about that at the end. But that wet and cold is just so negative to a seed, and the seed coatings are fantastic. On soybeans, even more potential disease problems. There's 144,000 seeds in a unit of soybeans. That unit of seed cost me roughly $43. Now, we'll treat that seed with biologicals, with the products that they've talked about here this morning. It'll cost me $13 an acre. My return is 4 bushel an acre. Times 12, that's $48. So not only do I get a return on my investment about 3 to 4 times, but it's the seed protection. It's the fact that I don't have to go in and replant, which always, not only does it cost you money, tremendous amounts of money, but the crop will never yield as much. The later you plant, the poorer the yield. So I am getting the benefits back on that. So I'm going to be brief. My summary is I can plant earlier, cold and wet soils, I'm protected. I get higher yields. By planting earlier in the spring, I have drier corn in the fall. This fall, my LP gas bill is going to be about $75,000 because of the late planting and the wet corn. I don't have to broadcast pesticides anymore. I used to do that, dump the pesticides in the sprayer and go out and spray. Seed treatments have changed my management practices. The biologicals, these guys talked about the biologicals. Tremendous technology coming there. We're finding that we can find these bacteria, we can add them to the coatings, and already it's 3 bushel an acre. Yesterday at the Farm Journal Forum, one of the individuals got up and talked about, he said, you know, we've discovered not only in the soil are there bacteria that are beneficial, but we as people are covered with bacteria, both on the outside and on the inside. And I never had it heard put to me like that. And as he said, bacteria is we are us. So I thought that was interesting. So the technology continues to improve us. It evolves. I've gone from none to manual to the progress we've got today, and it's fantastic. My yields improve. My management, I worry about different things today. I still worry, but, you know, it's totally changed how things evolve. I was asked a question, Gene asked a question about adopting new technology. There's going to be new methods of seed treatment, new treatments coming. And she said, well, how will farmers adopt that? And I said, if it goes through the, number one, it's got to be plantable. When I say be plantable, it can't cause, we got these little meters that meter out this seed in the planter, and they really work well. But if that seed is sticky or something like that and it messes us up, then it's not adaptable. But if it plants accurate, because we're looking for those picket fence stands, they said one plant out of 1,000 that doesn't come up is 0.8 bushel per acre. So we've got to have those stands, and that's extremely valuable. And but if that technology works, we adopt, because if it's good, if it's economically friendly for us and if it's friendly for the environment, farmers love to adopt the technology. But once again, it's got to be sustainable economically. At $7 corn, it's one thing. At $4 corn, it may not be sustainable at all. 2013, the year I just finished harvesting several days ago. Toughest year ever. Wet, planted late, planted part of my corn in June, all of my soybeans in June. Normally I'd like to have all that done by early May. Didn't work out this year. And then it was wet, and then it was cold, and then it was dry. It was the wettest spring, then the driest summer, drier than the year before. 2012, the great drought, as they described, still had good yields. This year, I expected the poorest yields I will probably thought I'd ever see. But I have been amazed, and I had not the best yields, but extremely good yields, and considering the year, I and all of other agriculture in my part of the state are amazed at how well these new seeds perform in the adverse climates we sometimes get. And I know that what I got this fall was attributed to those seeds and that seed treatment, because those poor seeds, they suffered miserably from the early May, and some of them were planted and they had 6 inches of snow on them. And then we finished up in June. So those are my comments. It's great technology. I appreciate it because I've gone from none to this. And so I'm looking, I hope I get, Lord gives me another 10 years, and I'm going to see what you guys come up with in the future.
Tim, not only do you lead Truth About Technology and Trade, but you've had a lot of experience leading the U.S. Grains Council, Trade Committee, National Corn Growers Association Board of Directors, chaired the Iowa Corn Growers Association. So you've been around the world, and you've seen farming in lots of different countries and what the demand horizon looks like. And yet you go home every day and do that hard work of farming. So thank you for that. I think it's really important that we emphasize once again the comments that have been shared here so far about productivity improvements, but also care for the environment. And a year ago, ASTA and CropLife came together and said, you know, there are a lot of questions being raised about dust emissions from treated seed planting and whether or not that might affect pollinators. And so we launched this seed treatment stewardship initiative a year ago, and we're about to now go forward with year number two and phase two, reaching out to farmers and the seeds industry to remind everyone that is involved in the chain of commerce with regard to treated seed and the products associated with seed treatment, that these products do require the care that is instructed on the product pesticide label, as indicated by US EPA's registration process. And so we're pleased to have been able to raise awareness and remind farmers and the seeds industry of the importance of stewardship as well, because we do care about the environment, and we want these products to continue to provide those environmental and health and safety benefits, as well as continuing to increase productivity and incent additional innovation. So with that, we're prepared to accept questions from those of you in the room or also those on the telephone who might want to ask a question. Yes, sir. And could I ask you to identify yourself when you ask your question?
David, that depended on the year. Now, I'll give you an example. If you had a black cutworm flight coming, I mean, you never knew. The issue was you had to be out there and catch it before it got you. And if you were asleep at the wheel, the cutworms got the plants. And then you'd go out and try and spray, you know, and you'd say, well, we'll try and catch the next one. So the answer is it might have been $5. It might have been 10. It might have been nothing. But you never knew. And I can remember driving by right by my house. I mean, we're all asleep at the switch at times. All at once, I'm looking at my corn stand, and corn just about that high, you can just start to see it, and all at once, it's starting to disappear. And I wasn't paying attention. The seed treatments today protect those plants, and it allows my management skills, it enhances my management skills, because I needed it. So I don't know if I've answered your question. You never know then. But I haven't sprayed for black cutworms in years.
Great. Another question.
Fortunate. Other people may be, but I've just been fortunate there.
Yes.
Cost is always one, but we've demonstrated it's cost and return. You know, if we can get a return, that won't stop you. If it'll go through the planter, and I mean, it's got to go through. You get your seed tubes, they plug up. The seed is sticky, it plugs up. You only go through that once, and you say, I'll never do that again, because if you've got a 24-row planter stop for an hour, you know, that's 40 acres that isn't planted when you're trying to clean it out. So you learn that I'll never use that again. So I can't think of another one. If it works, if it's cost-efficient, and we know that there's benefit there, but we need the research. The research, you know, farmers are reading. We have seed salesmen coming to us and say, we'll sell you this and we'll sell you that. And that's great. But I always say, show me the research that says there's benefit. And if there's benefit, we'll do it. Because I'm always looking for management enhancement.
So that's a great question. And I would also add that we've talked about biological products being part of the suite of seed treatment active ingredients today, and other beneficial biological seed treatment products that aren't specifically for a traditional crop protection outcome. So organic farmers will have some products that are certified as organic approved by USDA's organic program. But the range of products that are available to organic farmers for seed treatment is very narrow. And the conventional farmers will use those biologicals that are certified for organic production, but then they have the suite of other synthetic products available too. And that helps also for another phenomenon that's important that we haven't talked about in specific this morning, and that is rotation of different modes of action to manage the development of resistance by the pests, whether it's disease or insect. Andy, did you want to add?
Well, the other thing that's important to stress point out as you look at this is it's much like the seed company does with testing varieties. They test the seed treatments. Because you've got the different environments that you're going into, it may be the southeast where it's hot and humid, or you're going into the north where you've got, you know, a shorter time period and shorter light days that you have to deal with, or you go into the southwest or California. So you've got to have the ability to fit that area. And so the seed companies are going to test those various recommendations that they'll make prior to going to the farmer and saying, try this. It's not going to be the first test at the farmer. There's several generations that go through that, not only to prove the varieties are effective and are going to perform, but the treatment that go on them or the recommendations that they make to the farmer are going to be the right recommendations.
Another question. Anyone on the telephone with a question? I don't know if we have the ability to hear them.
If you'd like to ask a question, please press star one.
Sorry. Go ahead.
And you have a question from Ginny Hopkinson.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, just making sure. Hi, yeah, this is Jenny Hopkinson from Politico. My question is kind of about the timing of the report. I mean, the EU earlier this week actually started kind of limiting or put in place its limit on certain synthetic and neonicotinoid pesticides because of concerns over pollinators. And I mean, is this report kind of an effort to say, you know, the U.S. doesn't need to do that, that there's responsible ways to use these chemicals that don't have a negative effect on pollinators? I mean, is that the point of, or is that one of the benefits of issuing this report now?
Well, thank you, Jenny. So it is coincidental that our report is coming out this week when the EU has made this additional regulatory announcement. However, I would observe that the EU is announcing something unusual almost every week, so it really doesn't matter what week we would have chosen. We are not reacting or responding to the European Union's regulatory decisions. We are in constant dialogue with our colleagues at the European Crop Protection Association and have been pleased that the U.S. government has also participated in the dialogue about the regulatory science that underpins decisions that have profound outcomes. And we've talked to a lot of European farmers who are very worried about the loss of this technology for their planting season beginning in 2014 and the impacts on productivity that are almost certain to be very negative for European agriculture. But at the end of the day, I think it's important to understand the benefits of technologies, but it's also important to understand that we have high regard for the scientific process and the use of risk assessment in the American government, and particularly at USDA's Office of Pesticide Products when they make registration decisions and re-registration decisions and reevaluate pesticide products. And, you know, we're in constant dialogue with the U.S. government, including the Office of Pesticide Programs, about concerns with regard to all the technologies that our industry brings to the marketplace and the use of science and the regulatory process to make sure that these products are, in fact, safe and effective. And so there is a big difference between the United States and the European Union around the use of risk assessment and the regulatory process, and we hope that the European Union will change their minds someday.
Jenny, this is Andy Levine. I would add to that that we're looking at seed treatments across the board, and not only in this report from the Crop Life Foundation, but also in the Guide to Seed Treatment Stewardship. And there are a number of different products that are used depending on the crop, depending on the location that they're planted across the nation, and realizing the benefit of this application technology moving forward. So. This process started almost 3 years ago now, Jay, I'd say, with the guide, and then this about 2 years ago with the foundation study, realizing that we need to make sure that people understand how this technology is developed and how farmers have worked to adopt that technology. So I think Jay hit it on the head. It's depending on the week or the month. There's a new report coming out of Europe, so if we waited on that, then we wouldn't be able to make this presentation at any time.
I think Tim spoke eloquently about the benefit of seed treatment making farming easier and management able to be more comprehensive, but it also is easy for systems that reduce the demand of attention to also be taken for granted, and that's why we think it was timely for us in conjunction with the National Corn Growers Association, the American Soybean Association, and Farm Bureau to launch this seed treatment stewardship initiative a year ago, and we think we're making a significant difference in just, you know, reacquainting farmers and those in the seed industry with the importance of stewardship practices around these technologies, because they are important and need to be handled carefully.
Great, thanks.
Yes, question here.
Chris Wozniak, Biopesticides and Pollution Prevention Division at EPA. You had mentioned earlier that microbial products were being incorporated into the seed treatments, the pelleting and coating, and I'm just wondering if you can expand on whether these are more protectant type products or whether some of them are growth promoting products or both.
Yeah, so Andy, could you go ahead?
Yeah, I could touch on that briefly, Chris.
You can move the microphone over. Yeah.
It really is a combination of both as we go into it. The microbial or the biologicals are becoming more and more researched, I guess, and tested with the seed as you look at the effectiveness in the soil. They're starting out with the protectants, and then they're also looking to see if there is a growth inhibitor or growth enhancer benefit to it. So we'll see, I think, over the next 5 to 10 years, more and more of the biologicals that are used as a broadcast application experimented with the seed by the seed companies and seeing where those benefits are. Really what they're finding is that as you put it on the seed and in the soil, you have less of that environmental impact that you have when it's put on the plants out in the environment. And it seems to have more of a targeted effect at this point in time. So that's what we've got. That's what we're looking at going forward with biologicals.
Tim, do you have anything to add in terms of biologicals?
No. I had made my comments on those.
Anyone else?
I have an audio question from Gary.
Hello, this is Gary DeGiuseppe, Arkansas Radio Network. I have two questions. I'll ask them both at once. One is whether there are any concerns that the widespread adaptation of neonicotinoid insecticides seed treatments will lead to resistance problems developing. And secondly, is whether you've examined EPA's new labeling guidelines and have determined whether they are going to have an adverse effect on crop producers and insect control.
Thank you, Gary. So with regard to your first question about the widespread adoption of neonic insecticides as seed treatments, are there resistance concerns? Certainly with regard to any product that gets widespread adoption, we need to pay attention to resistance development. And I think what we have seen certainly in the earlier stages of innovation with regard to insect-resistant biotechnology seeds, that there are resistance incidents popping up with regard to those technologies, but it's generally not widespread. There are localized conditions and situations, particularly around soil-borne insects that need attention, and evolution of resistance needs scientific research, and that's something that is of concern to US EPA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the many state agriculture departments and extension services around the country that work in collaboration with our industry and the seeds industry and farmers to know as much as we can about resistance and having the appropriate alternative tools to rotate modes of action, whether it has to do with insect-resistant biotechnology traits or insecticides that are either synthetic or biological. So it's not always just seed treatment that might be part of the mode of action constituent in the overall portfolio of products being used, but also the return to some limited broadcast and other precision-applied technologies to manage resistance. So great question, but I don't think it's a problem that exists today, but one that we always need to be working to guard against and continuing to invest public and private research resources to ensure that we stay ahead of that curve. With regard to the new EPA label changes for the neonics, we believe that those are appropriate and implementable by the industry and understandable for farmers, and it will be another component of the overall stewardship education process that we'll be doing outreach around in this winter season ahead of the growing season 2014. Once again, Andy, could I see, do you have anything to add to either of those two questions? Okay.
I'd like to add something. Yeah, on the issue of resistance on the farm, we are, because we love these technologies and recognize the benefits, and not only is it my benefit, when I benefit, everyone benefits, and I didn't make that point earlier, but we constantly now are paying attention to best management practices. So, in or whether it's insect resistance, and Jay was right about, you know, insect resistance, but whatever it is, the educational efforts to us as producers, growers, is ramping up. And we do care, and because we want to keep technologies, we are doing the things necessary to rotations, whether it's weed herbicides for weeds, crop rotations, best management practices, we call it, to work against that type of resistance buildup. It's an issue that we are paying attention to.
Any other questions in the room or from the telephone? Yes.
Sarah, please. With the Conservation Districts again. I was just curious about some of the language that was in the introduction of the report, where it said that the products pose no unreasonable adverse effects on humans and the environment. And I was just wondering if you could speak as to what unreasonable the definition is.
Sure.
So this comes straight out of the safety standard that is in the regulatory statute called the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act that Congress has passed and reauthorized. And so that is the safety standard that EPA has to apply to making their regulatory decisions to register and re-register pesticide products. So an unreasonable adverse effect will vary depending on the scientific facts associated with any given active ingredient and how it is formulated and actually used potentially by farmers or other pesticide users, and the potential exposures that may occur to unintended targets in the environment. And so if it's a recoverable kind of an effect that doesn't have permanent impact on a non-target species, that would sort of get into that definition of a reasonable adverse effect, if you will, as opposed to an unreasonable adverse effect that might, you know, be an acute, you know, end of life for that particular non-target species. But again, it's the broad safety standard that is in the law that EPA has had decades and decades of experience in implementing on, again, a science-based approach, using every specific condition to take into consideration for a regulatory outcome. Yes?
Yeah, Chris Moss, again, EPA. I'll just also add to that, that what is reasonable or unreasonable is at the discretion of the administrator of the agency based on what the statute says about it. And in addition, FIFRA is a little unusual in that it's a risk-benefit statute. So benefits, both economic and environmental benefits, can be considered in a risk management decision,
right,
whether it's a registration or whatever.
Thank you. Was there another question on the telephone?
There are no questions at this time.
Very well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for your time this morning. I know it's a busy holiday period and lots of other things going on from a policy standpoint here in Washington, D.C. and around the world, so we appreciate your time and attention. If you have additional questions, don't hesitate to contact us at Crop Life Foundation and Crop Life America. Likewise, if you'd like to reach the other two panelists, we can help enable you to have a continued conversation with them as well. Tim and Andy, thank you for joining us as panelists, and thank you again, and we're adjourned.